everyone, and welcome to Film Bookcast, the official podcast of filmbook.com. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me as always is the stiff athletic Russian to my suave American Lothario.
Mike DiCruccio.
How you doing today, Mike?
Good, good. I'm glad I'm your stiff Russian friend.
Yeah, it's not bad. Your Army Hammer.
Yeah, I could also be the Lone Ranger, and then be surprised I still have a career after that.
So. And then also make Facebook. So
yeah, that's true. You're right. I forgot.
Yeah. If you've never listened to Film Bookcast before, essentially we start with some film news and then move on to some discussions where Mike and I each discuss whatever media we've been consuming lately. After that, we move on to our feature review. This week, we're reviewing the newest film from director Guy Ritchie, The Man from U.N.C.L.E. So, Mike, are you ready to do some stuff? You ready to talk about some things?
I am. I'm ready to have bad responses to the stuff because I'm the stiff Russian.
Right. Yes, your sense of humor is all out of whack.
It's gone now. Yeah, I don't know what to do.
So, for film news, we just have a couple items today. First of which, Jack Reacher 2 is shooting in the fall. This fall for a 2016 release, Kobe Smulders might be joining the cast. And Ed Zwick is directing the movie. Ed Zwick was the director of The Last Samurai, another Tom Cruise film.
Really?
Yes. The Last Samurai is a movie that made my old roommate cry every time he watched it.
So. Yeah, that was a lot of fun to do that, actually.
Yeah. But yeah, I wanted to mention this because last episode we both expressed our fondness for the original Jack Reacher.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. You know, what are your thoughts on Jack Reacher 2 coming back and happening?
Being yeah, I'm excited. I like the first one. And I think it'll be cool. I don't know. I'm excited to see at least, it's not quite original, the plot or the star. I mean, I don't know the plot of the second one, but like the character of Jack Reacher isn't all that unique, but it is something new for Tom Cruise to be doing, I guess, which is cool. I'd rather see an Edge of Tomorrow too.
Yeah.
I don't know how that would happen, but
they're already on the Edge of Tomorrow. Like, how can you get any further than that?
Just make it more in the future, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very excited for Jack Reacher 2. I really loved Jack Reacher 1, and, you know, a lot of that was Christopher McQuarrie directing and writing that movie.
Right.
But also, it was because it was Tom Cruise, and Tom Cruise has proven time and again in the past few years that he's, like, one of the best actors we have working today.
Yeah, he has seemingly defeated Oprah's attempts at sabotage.
Yeah, that was all on Oprah.
Yeah. It's great.
Yeah, and so I'm a little, with Jack Reacher 2, like, I sort of would like Chris McQuarrie to come back, but, you know, he was obviously busy doing Mission Impossible 5.
So was Tom Cruise.
Well, yeah, but I mean, during pre-production of this movie or whatever.
Oh, right, yeah.
But I could see Jack Reacher being a Mission Impossible-esque franchise.
Yeah.
Where every movie has a new director bringing their own thing to it,
mm-hmm.
with the only central element being Tom Cruise.
Being Jack Reacher, yeah. That would be cool. I would like that a lot, actually.
Yeah, it'd be a lot of fun. And it's, you know, different from Mission Impossible because Jack Reacher is a much more like a solo kind of guy, whereas Mission Impossible, he has like a team surrounding him.
Right, and it's much more low tech and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So that would be cool. That would be interesting.
Yeah, so I'm into the idea of Jack Reacher 2. I think it's a cool idea. And it's adapting, like, it's based on a book series, Jack Reacher.
Right.
And I think they're taking this plot from, like, the 14th book in the series or something.
Sure, why not?
Yeah, well, like, the way the books are written, like, they're kind of, like, all standalone stories just featuring the Jack Reacher character.
Oh, okay.
So they can kind of just pick and choose. So, for example, the first movie was based on, like, the 8th book or something like that. That was called One Shot. I forget what the name of this book is, but it is going to be Jack Reacher 2.
Fair enough. That's cool. I like that kind of thing. It would be cool to have another big franchise like the Jack Ryan films that are just, like, kind of standalone.
Right.
Or featuring the same characters.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I'm into the idea of Jack Reacher 2. I also, I mean, we didn't mention this a while ago, but, like, this sort of happened a while ago, but similar news to Jack Reacher 2, John Wick 2.
It's
happening.
How did we not mention that?
Yeah, I don't know. It kind of slipped through the cracks, but, yeah, I mean, Keanu Reeves is returning for John Wick 2. The same directors are coming back, David Lechuski and Chad Steich, or whatever their names were.
Right. The guys.
Yeah, the guys. The stuntmen guys who decided to do John Wick and were awesome. Right. And so, like, John Wick and Jack Reacher are kind of similar movies. They're both, like, older action stars come back to kick some ass.
Yeah.
John Wick's a little bit more violent than Jack Reacher, but it's...
a tiny bit. I wonder if that's going to be the new thing now. Well, I mean, it already is the thing, I guess. But having the older, like, action guys come just make movies where they're old, like Liam Neeson.
Yeah, Liam Neeson or Schwarzenegger. Every movie Schwarzenegger has made since he came back to acting after being the governor of California has been about how he's old.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's what you got.
That's
go
the
with
plot
it.
Of every one of those movies.
Yeah, it's true.
I think the problem with the reason that's happening is because we don't really have that many cool young action stars anymore.
Yeah, yeah, you know? I agree.
Like, we have The Rock.
Right.
The Rock is awesome. I love The Rock. Yeah. We have Jason Statham.
Right. None of those guys, neither of those are young. I mean, they're not very old, but they're not very young. I mean, The Rock is, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, they're, like, they've both been around a while, though. Like, that's what you're saying, yeah. I mean...
Yeah. I mean, really, our Lord and Savior in this is going to be Jai Courtney.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, if we're looking for, like, young action stars, we have, like, Jai Courtney, Sam Worthington.
Right, like, yeah.
You know, guys who are, like, super bland, unappealing. Like, you know, the older guys have, like, charisma and character, and we don't really have a ton of, like, really young guys to take that mantle.
Yeah, maybe Liam Hemsworth could, like, step up to the plate. That would be kind of cool, I guess.
I don't know. I mean, Liam Hemsworth isn't even the coolest Hemsworth. Like, what...
Yes, that's true. That's a good point.
Yeah. I mean, and, like, Chris Hemsworth's a good action star.
Yeah.
But he's, like, I don't know, it's different because he's a superhero. He's not, like, an action hero.
Right.
You know,
he's
not
slamming babes the whole movie.
Well, I mean, but, like, superhero action is a lot different than, like, you know.
Than, like, espionage.
Real action. You know, I mean, like, you know, with John Wick or with Jack Reacher, like, you have, like, hand-to-hand combat going on. You have, like, this, like, real stunts happening in these movies. And in, you know, Thor, for example, like, it's almost all CGI battles.
Right.
You know, so it's a different kind of action. And it's not what I think of when I think of action hero, so to speak.
Right. No, I would agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I was actually reading an article that's Robert Downey Jr. is the highest paid action star. And literally all he does... It, for his action is to, like, put his face up in front of a camera and say words.
Yeah, and talk to...
And talk to a computer.
Yeah,
then
that's it.
Then the rest is all a CGI suit. Like,
right, yeah, that's a good point. That's weird. I never thought of that before.
But that's a little bit off-topic discussion.
Jack Reacher 2.
Jack Reacher 2, John Wick 2, very excited about both of them. But the big news coming out this week, so Disney had their big D23 conference pretty recently. And, you know, they had some big panels, some for Star Wars, some for Marvel. For Marvel, they showed off some footage from Captain America Civil War and from Doctor Strange. The Captain America Civil War footage was supposedly very promising. I'm sure we'll see that eventually soon.
Yeah.
But the big news coming out of the Star Wars panel is that Colin Trevorrow, director of Jurassic World and Safety Not Guaranteed, will be directing Star Wars Episode 9.
Right.
So, first of all...
I feel like I should be more excited about this than I am.
It's... I mean, that's... Like, A... Like, Jurassic World was just fine. Like, it was...
Yeah.
A movie that was like, alright, like, I can...
That happened.
Yeah. I had a lot of problems, but I was able to enjoy it.
I still can't decide if whether or not that was the smart version or not of that film.
I feel like it was the dumbest version of a smart idea.
Yeah, yes, okay. We'll put it that way. I like it. So hopefully that doesn't happen for Star Wars Episode 9.
Yeah, that's like, I don't know, like Jurassic World was, like, had a lot of problems, but it was ultimately fun. And so if Star Wars Episode 9 is going to continue that pattern, then it'll basically just be Return of the Jedi. And so...
Right.
You know, so I can, you know, whatever. But, like, part of me is like, all right, Colin Trevorrow, like, I'm not super on board with that choice. The other part of me is like, I don't care that much, because that movie is, like, 5 movies from now. Like, we...
Right. Like, that's a good point.
Like, I haven't gotten Star Wars Episode 7 yet. I can't bring myself to care.
About episode nine.
Like, that's so far away in the future.
Yeah.
You know, we have, there's, J.J. Abrams is still doing 7. We have Gareth Edwards doing Rogue One.
Right.
We have Rian Johnson doing episode 8, and we have Phil Lord and Chris Miller doing the Han Solo spinoff, and then we have Colin Trevorrow doing episode 9.
Wow.
And so, yeah, I mean, the thing is, out of all of those filmmakers, I think Colin Trevorrow is the weakest, and that's not even based on that much. I mean, I'm just basing that on Safe Not Guaranteed and Jurassic World. Safe Not Guaranteed, which is a movie I like quite a bit.
I like that a lot, yeah.
Yeah, and Jurassic World was fine, you know, it was whatever. So I'm not even comfortable saying he's the weakest, but he's the most inexperienced, I guess, out of all those filmmakers.
Yeah. I mean, that list of names, Colin Trevorrow does pale in comparison to.
Yeah. I mean, if the closest analog would probably be Gareth Edwards, who...
Right, yeah, that's true.
...also did one small indie movie, and then did a big blockbuster movie, and now is doing Star Wars.
That's actually, yeah, it's a very good point.
A big blockbuster movie involving a dinosaur.
Right. Wow.
And then doing Star Wars.
Yeah, I think, you're right. But I guess because it's so far in the future, and we don't know yet, but if he does one more movie in between or before Star Wars Episode 9, I would assume, because that's like 6 years from now, right? Or something like that?
That's, I think 4 years from now. I think it's 2019.
Oh, all right. That's actually not that far.
The thing is, we're having like new Star Wars movies every year until we die now. So,
it's just like Marvel. Great.
I think he probably is going to have time to make like a smaller movie on the side, which would be cool.
Okay. Yeah, it would be an opportunity for me to gain some more confidence for him. Not that I think he's going to do a bad job, but I just, like you said, he's only made 2 movies so far.
Right. One of which was the like one of the most financially successful movies ever. The third highest grossing movie of all time. So yeah,
that's true. That is
like,
true.
That's probably why he was hired to direct Star Wars Episode 9.
Yeah, we can definitely guarantee that that's what happened there.
Yes. But, we can guarantee that, but we can't guarantee safety.
Whoa. Wow. And on that note, let's... There's no coming back from that.
Yeah. So that's Colin Trevorrow directing Episode 9. There was also some news about Rogue One coming out from that panel. They released like a cast photo with like some of the cast members. It looks pretty cool. I mean, it was a cast photo, so it was whatever. But like, you know, and they announced a couple more cast members. Like Alan Tudyk is going to be in the movie. Mads Mikkelsen from Hannibal is going to be in the movie. And it's pretty much like almost entirely made out of cool character actors, which is what's really exciting to me about Rogue One.
Is it still, do we know anything about it yet? Because the last thing I heard, it's like an Ocean's 11 style heist movie in space.
That's basically, basically the movie's about, it takes place in between Star Wars Episode 3 and 4.
Okay.
And it's about the rebels stealing the Death Star plans that they discussed in A New Hope.
Right. That's amazing.
I think it's actually a really cool concept for a Star Wars movie, and to do like an Ocean's 11 style heist. Like,
On that one sentence synopsis, this might be my favorite Star Wars movie.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing I want to see more from the spinoffs. Like, really cool out there ideas like that. Like, I mean, the other spinoff they're doing right now is the Han Solo spinoff, and that's fine. And I'm excited for that because Phil Lord and Chris Miller are directing it, and they're amazing. But at the same time, like, there's, instead of seeing, like, the origins of a character or, like, young Han Solo or young Sebulba or something, like...
Right.
Young Sebulba, I don't know why I thought of that.
But you went with it,
What was Sebulba doing before The Phantom Menace? He's just winning pod races and laying ladies.
He's being a slaver.
But I would like the idea of like doing a Rogue One, seeing the rebels like taking the Death Star plans and like having all these characters who you've never met before, like doing these kind of cool things. There was one of the ideas for the spinoff, a rumor for a spinoff that was way a few years ago, like right when Lucasfilm had like recently bought Star Wars and like the idea of a new Star Wars movie was just a twinkle in our eyes.
Yeah.
One of the spinoff ideas that was like a rumor going around was that Zack Snyder was going to do a Seven Samurai inspired Star Wars movie.
Yes, I remember that one.
I was so on board with that. Like, I'm
awesome.
Like, I'm actually like despite my reservations about Man of Steel, I'm a pretty big Zack Snyder fan. And so, like,
right.
The idea of him, his style of direction in Star Wars doing a Seven Samurai movie, oh, like...
That would have been so awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope they kind of take sort of Marvel's cue. I mean, that they don't... I mean, we talked about it, how the smaller character Marvel films are sort of genre movies in some right. way, like Ant-Man was a heist film kind of thing.
Right.
That would be awesome if they do that for the Star Wars spin-off in-between movies.
Yeah, I mean, Marvel's done a really good job with that. And I think because they're both owned by Disney, I think Disney's going to try to use the same strategy with Star Wars.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like Ant-Man was sort of a heist movie. Captain America the Winter Soldier was a conspiracy theory thriller.
Right.
Guardians of the Galaxy was a big space opera, like Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. Like Star Wars, yeah.
You know, Iron Man 3 was like an 80s throwback action movie.
Right. So that would be really cool to see them do that in the Star Wars movie. Even if we can get a, like, straight-up Western in the Space Western franchise, that would be awesome.
Be unreal. It would basically be Firefly.
Yeah, exactly.
Which Alan Tudyk was in Firefly, and now he's in Rogue One. So our dreams might be coming true.
It's all coming together.
So anyway, that's Colin Trevorrow, Breaking Star Wars Episode 9, and a little thoughts about Rogue One and the other Star Wars spinoffs. Let's move on into our discussions, Mike.
Yes.
Why not? So you have something you want to discuss today? Mike Spruccio?
I do, indeed. Right. Something very important. No, I'm kidding.
Discuss it then.
So there was a BBC show that premiered in 2013, I believe, called Utopia.
Okay.
And it was actually, HBO was just in talks with David Fincher to adapt it for the U.S.
Right.
But apparently after HBO saw the proposed budget, they were like, just kidding, and never mind.
David Fincher had, like, two shows in the works at HBO, and now they're both, like, kind of in flux. Like, nobody knows what's happening with either one of them.
Yeah. Which is tragic, because I think David Fincher would have done an amazing job adapting this.
Yeah, and David Fincher was, like, scheduled to direct every episode of the first season of Utopia.
Yeah.
If so that was going to happen.
The basic plot of Utopia is there's, like, this comic book or graphic novel that was written by, like, this guy in a psych ward, and he went killed himself, and all this crazy stuff happened, and, like, weird things started coming true from the graphic novel, so it kind of gains this kind of cult following, conspiracy theory, like, people think he was a prophet. And it's kind of this whole global conspiracy thriller action thing happening, and it's crazy and insane, and it's one of the most, like, cinematic TV shows that I've seen in a long time, which is happening a lot now, actually, you know.
Right,
A lot of film directors are moving to, like, David Fincher was going to direct an HBO show.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know if that's what happened in this case specifically. I didn't look at who the directors were. But it is, the camera work is very fluid and dynamic, and it's, like, just a joy to watch. And it's one of those things, sort of, if you watch or if you listen to our other podcast, The Complete Works, we talked about Rumblefish, where it makes you very uncomfortable, like, just the camera work and the angles and all the, and the sound design. And there's a lot of that going on just to convey the, like, sheer paranoia of these characters. Like, there's one... One guy who's being blackmailed during the first season. That's all I've watched. There's two seasons, six episodes each. It was canceled before a third season was made.
Okay.
But one of the characters is, like, being blackmailed, and he's, you know, they're threatening to release information about him. And every time he's on screen in that episode, there's just whispers, like, incoherent whispers in the sound, like, in the audio mix. And it's really, like... It's just like a goosebumps. I don't know how to describe it. It was really creepy. Like, as he's just walking and he's, like, by himself on a street, and there's just, like, people whispering in the audio mix, and it's awesome. I don't know. So there's a lot of stuff like that.
Okay.
So people should watch this show because it's great.
All right. That's Utopia. I guess I was on the BBC. Right?
Yeah.
And
I don't know. You may have to go to alternate methods to find it. it's not on Netflix, unfortunately.
Okay.
I know it is available on DVD and Blu-ray. I did see that. So keep an eye out for it, I guess.
All right, cool. Yeah, that's Utopia, and hopefully the HBO remake happens, because it sounds like a great concept for a show, and if Dave Fincher was directing, like, every episode of it, like, I'm on board already. Like, that's...
Yeah. Or I hope, even if David Fincher is not involved, well, I mean, that would be the best. That would be the best version of that, but... I think it's something that's very much in the kind of, like, you know, public eye right now, the, like, global conspiracy, everything, you know, that whole,
right,
like, world government kind of thing. So I think it would be very popular in the U.S. right now if it were to come out. So hopefully it does.
Okay, cool. Yes. So segue into my discussion, which is about an HBO show.
Oh, really? So,
yeah. Okay. Well, I actually have two discussions. But the first one will be about an HBO show. Okay. It's called Show Me a Hero, and this is a new miniseries from the creator of The Wire, David Simon.
Right.
And every episode is directed by Paul Haggis, who is the director of Crash, which is a movie I hate. But
but it was, like, kind of good, I guess.
But David Simon's name is what drew me to this. And and this show stars people like Oscar Isaac in the lead, Catherine mm-hmm. Keener, Alfred Molina, a whole bunch of others. And I'm going to describe the plot to you, and you're going to probably fall asleep. But
okay, try.
The plot of the show is it's 1987.
Okay.
We're in Yonkers.
All right.
And we're discussing the housing situation. Like low-budget housing moving into high-income areas. And that's the entire show.
So it's like Board Meeting, the miniseries.
Yes. And it's, okay. and it's great.
Wow. All right.
Yeah, I've seen the first two episodes. Right now, there's six episodes of the show in total. Four of them have aired. The parts three and four just aired last night. I haven't watched them yet. But the first two are so good.
Okay.
And they remind me a lot of The Wire, which I've seen some of. I haven't seen, like, the entire show.
Yeah.
Been meaning to. I'm probably going to watch it now that I've been...
You should.
Have you watched The Wire?
I also have not watched all of it. But from what I watched up through season three, and they do a really cool thing where... we're not discussing The Wire, but I'm going to explain it anyway. But each season is kind of like a different aspect. Like, right. Season one is about the people...
That's what I've heard. I mean, I've only seen most of season one.
Right, so it's about, like, the drug crew or whatever. I can't think of the terms for them right now. And then, like, season two is about, like, the docks, the human trafficking and stuff like that.
Right.
So each season focuses on a different thing, which is cool.
Right. But Show Me a Hero deals a lot with race relations in Yonkers in 1987.
Right.
Because it deals with a lot of institutionalized racism. Like, the idea that these low-budget houses could not exist in these higher-budget communities. And they were trying to... Like, the people were ridiculously against it, and the board was trying to go for it, and it was this whole thing. Oscar Isaac is amazing in the show. He's really good. Alfred Molina is, like, the greatest slime ball, like, in the world.
Reprising his Doc Ock role.
Reprising Doc Ock. Jim Belushi is in the show.
He's still alive?
As the former mayor before Oscar Isaac.
Okay.
He's pretty good. Like, he's everyone in the show is, like, firing on all cylinders. David Simon does such a great job writing the show, and Paul Haggis is a really good job directing the show. I think he's actually a really talented director when he's not writing his own stuff.
Right.
Like for example, Crash, which is a movie that I'm never gonna get over. Like, that's like I really disliked that movie, and then it won Best Picture, and then I disliked it more. Like, it was.
Is it just because it's, like, sort of self-serving in a way?
Yeah, it's that. I mean, I'm not trying to get a discussion about Crash, but that movie is up its own ass about racism. It takes the most, like, simplistic views about racism, and then tries to explain how people get better or whatever. Like, for example, Sandra Bullock is, like, a hardcore racist in that movie,
right?
And then she falls down the stairs and she's not a racist anymore. That's her arc. Uh-huh. That's her arc in that movie.
Yeah.
Like, and stuff like that just really bugged me about Crash.
Not there in the show?
No, this is a much more nuanced version. Because this is David Simon writing as opposed to Paul Haggis writing.
Right.
Paul Haggis is just directing. And when he's just directing, he's doing a really good job.
He does a good job.
Yeah. So that's Show Me a Hero. It's a really, really good show. It's only six episodes, so people should give it a shot. The other discussion I wanted to bring up, last night I watched It Follows, the horror movie. Directed by David Robert Mitchell, that came out earlier this year, and it is a very solid time.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. I'm kind of embarrassed that I didn't get a chance to see it.
Yeah, I was really trying to go see it when it was in theaters, but it left before I got the chance to. But
yeah,
I mean, it's It's really good. It's a horror movie. This movie stars Maika Monroe and Keir Gilchrist. Maika Monroe was also in The Guest as the female lead of that movie. So she's like making the rounds in terms of independent horror films. But and Keir Gilchrist, I haven't seen much recently, but he was the kid from It's Kind of a Funny Story, which is a movie that I really liked.
Oh.
So it follows follows Maika Monroe, and it's basically about this girl who gets involved with this guy, and they have sex. And right after they have sex, this creature that can shapeshift into anything, any person, starts following her, and she can't get rid of it. And it's following her with the intent to kill her when it reaches her. And it moves very slowly, so she can, like, run as much as she can to escape. It. But if she stops, like, it's still going to keep following. It's still going to keep walking towards her. And it's a really solid horror movie. It's a really interesting metaphor about sex.
One of my friends saw it, and she described it as an allegory for, like, sexual assault or something along those lines.
I mean, it was much more...
trauma.
I definitely got more of a... It's more about sexually transmitted diseases. I thought it was...
Yeah, that works, too.
It was like AIDS, the horror movie.
Yeah. But I remember when it came out, I saw, like, one review, probably a tweet, which is sad that counts as a movie review now. But it was, like, the best 80s horror film came out last week. But when I saw that tweet or review, I was like, yes, this needs to be a thing I need, this has to be a thing I need to see if it's like that. But did it get a theatrical release? I don't remember.
It did, yeah. Yes,
it did, right?
Yeah, it was playing nearby me, and I was like, it was playing like right around the time I was leaving school and like this whole thing, so I couldn't go out to see it. But it's very John Carpenter-esque in its compositions and like how it's shot and its themes, and you know, it's very much like a lost John Carpenter movie in a way. But nice. It still feels like very much its own thing. I think David Robert Mitchell is a director to watch. Like he's could be going to some interesting places.
Was this his first film?
No, he directed one a few years ago called The Myth of the American Sleepover, which I think was a drama.
It sounds like it could be a horror film.
Man, I never know. I know nothing about it. I just know called.
Yeah, I don't know. But that's cool. So it's a person to keep an eye on.
Yeah, definitely. And I might check out his other movie because this was really solid. I don't think it's a... we've had like such a good run of indie horror movies lately.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like every couple months is like one indie horror movie that everybody's talking about for a while.
Yeah.
So like we had The Guest and there was The Babadook, You're Next, for example. And I don't think It Follows is quite as good as any of those movies, but it's still just a really solid time and it's really effective and it scares. So definitely worth a look.
I'll have to keep it out.
All right. So I think that wraps up our discussion segment. So are you ready to move on into our featured review?
I am. I'm ready to talk about A Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Just one?
Just one man.
Just one man. Okay.
I mean, it's called The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
That's true. But there's two men from U.N.C.L.E.
Even though there's two of them. Yeah. Yep.
Man, all right. So that's a preview of our thoughts of this movie. All right, let's get ready for our featured review of The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
You told me this was going to be a simple extraction. They were waiting for me. What was waiting for me was barely human. It tore the back off my car.
Grow a spine, Solo. This is the most dangerous time in our history. We recently discovered an international criminal organization with an atom bomb. We have no choice but to work together on this.
America teaming up with Russia. That doesn't sound very friendly.
We'll leave you two to get acquainted.
I'll let you tag along, but it's in and out, no mess, and we both forget about it in the morning.
This is not the Russian way.
All right, that was from the trailer for The Man from U.N.C.L.E. It's the new film from director Guy Ritchie, written by Guy Ritchie and Lionel Wigram. It stars Henry Cavill as Napoleon Solo, Armie Hammer as Ilya Kuraken, also stars Alicia Vikander, Elizabeth Debicki, Jared Harris, and Hugh Grant, among others. So essentially, the plot for Man from U.N.C.L.E., you get American agent Napoleon Solo has to team up with Russian agent Ilya Kuraken They're teamed up with this German girl, Alicia, played by Alicia Vikander, Gabby Teller, and they go on adventures to stop these other people from getting nuclear weapons or whatever. It takes place in the 1960s, and it's based on the old 1960s TV show, The Man from U.N.C.L.E. Do you know anything about The Man from U.N.C.L.E., the TV show?
No, not really. I've never watched it before. I got the basic. I knew it was kind of a spy show from the 60s about the Cold War. So that's kind of really all you need to know.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically, I had a basic idea of the premise of The Man from U.N.C.L.E., and my dad used to watch the show, so he knows, like, he has told me about it before. But all I really knew about Man from U.N.C.L.E. is that it had an American and a Russian in it, and also there was an episode of Mad Men where Sally Draper watched it in one episode and she masturbated to it.
Who doesn't, right?
Exactly, right? So, that said, what do you think? I mean, are you a Guy Ritchie fan? Like, are you a fan of the work of Guy Ritchie?
Yes, yeah. Guy Ritchie is, I don't know if I'd say one of my favorite directors, but I do love his movies a lot.
Really?
I think Rock and Roll is probably one of my favorite movies, as well as Snatch.
Okay.
I mean, of his movies, not ever.
Okay.
But, I think they're a lot of fun, and they're usually very funny. And I do like how stylized his movie is. Like, you can tell it's a Guy Ritchie movie when you see one.
Yeah. I mean, he has a very unique style. Generally speaking, when people think of, like, the best Guy Ritchie movies, they think of either Lock, Stock, Two Smoking Barrels and Snatch, like his first two films. And those are the ones that I like the most. I like Snatch a lot. I think Snatch is great. I'm not a super huge fan of his work just because I don't dislike it, but to me it's a lot of style over stuff. Like, there's not that much there underneath the style. And I think his first two movies have a little bit of something there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and part of that is because I think Matthew Vaughn was a producer on those movies. Like, Matthew Vaughn was his producing partner for a while. For his first three movies, I think. And then afterwards, Matthew Vaughn, like, kind of split up from him to go be a director himself.
Right.
He went on to direct Stardust and Kick-Ass. Matthew Vaughn's first movie is Layer Cake, which is very much a Guy Ritchie-esque movie.
Which I saw without knowing it was a Matthew Vaughn film and was like, this is, like, my favorite Guy Ritchie movie. This is amazing. And then I looked it up and was like, yeah, I'm half right.
Yeah. And so I think it's kind of interesting that both Matthew Vaughn and Guy Ritchie decided to do 60s throwback spy movies
right.
in the same year.
He directed Kingsman, right?
Yeah, Matthew Vaughn directed Kingsman. Right.
Okay, yeah. That was going to be what I was going to say, is that this was a very similar vein to Kingsman.
Right, but Kingsman, I thought it was a lot better.
Kingsman pulled it off better because it's set in the present and is, like, a reference to the 60s.
Sure.
Whereas this is a 60s spy movie. It's set in the 60s.
Yeah. I mean, they both do both of those things pretty well. I think this is Guy Ritchie's best movie in a while. Like, Guy Ritchie's last two movies were the Sherlock Holmes movies, which I thought were pretty awful. Like, I wasn't a fan of either of those. And so, I don't know. I mean, like, I haven't really been enamored with a ton of Guy Ritchie stuff since he went solo, or Napoleon solo, if... But, you know, I think The Man from U.N.C.L.E. is a pretty solid time, I think. Like, it's not reinventing the wheel, it's not, like, one of Guy Ritchie's best, but it's pretty solid, you know? And it's weird, because I've been hearing about this movie for a long time. This movie's been in development for a really long time. I don't know if you've followed it at all over the course of the years, but Steven Soderbergh was originally supposed to direct this movie.
What? I would have loved to see that version.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be Steven Soderbergh directing it with George Clooney starring as Napoleon Solo.
What?
Yep, that was...
That would have been a completely different movie.
I know. Like,
oh, my God.
But Steven Soderbergh eventually dropped out and retired from filmmaking. And,
right.
And, you know, George Clooney left shortly after Steven Soderbergh did. And there was a whole bunch of people, like, going in and out of this movie, and eventually lands on Guy Ritchie and Henry Cavill and Armie Hammer. And so,
right.
You know, I think the end result, it's a solid time. It's a fun time. The problem is, I feel like I saw the movie a couple days ago, and I'm just, like, struggling to recall aspects of it, because it's, like, it feels like it's a fun time while watching it, but it doesn't really stay with me. In some ways.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's not, like you said, it doesn't reinvent the wheel in any way, and it's not I don't want to say it's not unique, but it is kind of just, it's sort of something we've seen already. It has that feel to it.
Yeah.
I've seen this before. Not in a, like a detraction movie, but it just is not, it's not memorable, I guess.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and, part of the problem is that, the story that you follow, it's a very standard spy story. You know, it's, yeah. You gotta stop these people from getting nuclear weapons. And that's,
right, and I think it doesn't ham it up enough, I guess, would be. Like, it is aware it's a 60s movie, but it doesn't really play into it very much, I think.
I think it evokes the 60s very well. Like, it feels like it takes place in the 60s, and, like, there's...
Yes, that's true.
You know, it has, like, the same fashions and all. I think it nailed the 60s look and feel pretty well. And, you know, I think what helps this movie out a lot, like, that keeps it entertaining, is that its two leads, Henry Cavill and Armie Hammer, are really fun to watch together.
Yeah,
I think
that's very true.
Henry Cavill's a better Superman here than he is in Man of Steel. Like,
absolutely. And I think he does an amazing job as Napoleon Solo.
Yeah, he's so much fun to watch. He has so much charisma. His American accent is so good.
It's so great. This movie has a lot of very funny, or pretty funny moments, at least, and right. Most of them are Henry Cavill.
Yeah, just him being, like, a suave badass.
Yeah, just, like, sort of being the American James Bond.
Yeah, in a lot of ways. And, you know, the dichotomy between him and Armie Hammer as Ilya Kuryakin is a lot of fun. I think Armie Hammer is also doing pretty good work here as the Russian character. And,
yeah.
They do pretty well together.
Yeah, there was a few moments where I wasn't sure if they referenced the fact that they, like, that Henry Cavill was Superman and that Armie Hammer was the Lone Ranger in that one movie that happened. Just in the beginning, the opening chase or whatever, when Armie Hammer rips the trunk off the car that he's...
Right.
I, like, felt, and Henry Cavill's, like, so shocked at how strong he is. I was like, I don't know, it just feels like that could be, like, a wink to a Superman kind of thing, I don't know. I'm gonna pretend it is.
Alright, fair enough. Yeah, also, I think the score of this movie is terrific.
Yes,
Daniel Pemberton's score, the music in this movie, really good, and really evocative of the 60s and, like, the time period, and, like, it feels like one of the best scores I've heard this year. Like, it's really,
it's
really
great.
Solid.
Because that's, like, the kind of music I listen to a lot. It's just, like, yeah. Weird 60s jazz funk kind of stuff. And it was awesome to have that in a movie.
Yeah.
It was really cool. And it fit really well. And that reminded me of Guy Ritchie. I don't know if that composer, is he, like, with Guy Ritchie? Is he, like, that his partner or in any kind of way?
You know, I'm not actually sure.
Do you know how that happens a lot with filmmakers? They'll have, like, a...
Right. Let's see. Dan Pemberton.
Spoils all their movies. Yeah. I don't know. Because it felt like it fit Guy Ritchie's other movies have right. That similar kind of thing, too.
Yeah, no, this is his first Guy Ritchie movie. He also did the score for the upcoming Steve Jobs movie, directed by Danny Boyle, and he did the score for The Counselor, or The Scott. Yeah, he's actually pretty... It looks like he's pretty relatively new to film scores.
Yeah, fair enough. He's doing a good job, though. Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
But I guess in terms also of Guy Ritchie's style didn't really shine through in this. There was only a few moments where I was like, oh, Guy Ritchie thing is happening on screen. And they're like weird split screen montage stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going on.
It was a lot of that, but it didn't have as much.
You didn't think so? I felt like it was pretty heavily Guy Ritchie influenced. You know, just the way certain, like, scenes were shot, like the chase scene at the beginning, like you would, like, zoom out from the car.
Oh,
like,
yeah, that's true. That did
happen. Or, like, move over right. And zoom into the other car or whatever. Like.
Right. Yeah, I didn't even think of that. You're right. Good point, Mike.
Thanks.
Yeah, no problem.
I think overall I enjoy the movie. The thing is, the plot is exactly the same as Spy, the Melissa McCarthy movie that came out earlier this year.
Yeah.
But it's not played for laughs as much.
Right, right. That's what I meant, that it needs to ham it up a little bit more, I think, in Man from U.N.C.L.E. If they had, this would have been a much better, or more memorable, more memorable film.
Yeah, like, it's totally fun to watch while you're watching it, but it's not something that really stays with me.
Yeah.
As, you know, time passes. I thought Alicia Vikander was pretty good in this movie.
Yeah, it's nice to see more than, like, her face, and that's it.
Yes. in Ex Machina.
Ex Machina, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think she's kind of blowing up in terms of, like, the role she's getting, and, like,
yeah.
she's getting a lot of roles and stuff. So I'm excited to see more of her, because she was great in Ex Machina. Like, she was amazing in that movie.
Phenomenal. She did a great job in this, too. So I'm excited to see her do a lot of stuff now. So that's cool.
Yeah, and also Hugh Grant is the British the British Secret Service agent or whatever. He's fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool. He hasn't been in anything in a long time that I've seen him in.
Yeah, he was in he had like a small role in Cloud Atlas, and there's the last time I saw him in anything.
Okay.
Jared Harris is also in this movie. Jared Harris was on Mad Men. He played Lane Price, who was the British employee of their office, but he is the American head of the CIA in this movie,
right?
Which is a little
weird. There's a lot of moments, or a lot of, like, smaller character actors, I guess. Well, Hugh Grant's not a character actor, but...
Right. But there are, like, some smaller, like,
smaller roles.
Smaller roles with, like, significant actors in them. Which
yes.
Kind of
yeah, so that was cool. I thought he did a good job for the 5 minutes that he was on screen, I guess.
All right. So I think, I guess we can move on to spoilers for Man from U.N.C.L.E., because we've pretty much kind of discussed it. Like, there's not that much to say. Like, we enjoyed the movie while we watched it, and then afterwards, like yeah, all right. Like,
whatever, that happened.
It's fine. All right, so that's our general thoughts of Man from U.N.C.L.E. Let's move on to spoilers. I just have a few thoughts, so let's do that right now.
There's no way that he can win.
No.
Oh, that's all.
No.
So anyway, what'd you think of the season finale of Game of Thrones?
Right?
Oh, no. I'm reading the books.
Sorry,
book.
And he reads slow.
No. Hey.
We can never talk about
you're
it.
In trouble.
We're never going to talk
that's
about
good.
It.
Okay.
No, you're right.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Hey, mm-hmm. Has anybody seen that new Russell Crowe thriller? Because let me tell you.
Sorry, it's just... We're going tomorrow, and I don't want to know a thing about it.
She doesn't want to know a thing.
Gotcha. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So good,
though.
Who won the game?
I'm going to watch it later.
Oh, you're...
Oh, you have the DVR. Yeah.
I got it.
Sorry. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mom's a word.
Yeah.
So oh.
So,
yeah.
What's the weather going to be like this
Okay, so spoilers for Man from U.N.C.L.E. starting right now. So Man from U.N.C.L.E. has the same annoying ending as Fantastic Four. I don't know if you're...
Yeah, yeah, it does.
So, yeah, I mean...
That's the new thing, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, Fantastic Four was, they're all looking over wistfully and teary-eyed, and they were like, oh, there's something kind of fantastic about all this, isn't there? Oh,
right.
Man, that could be our team name. And then it cuts to Fantastic Four. and the ending of this movie has, like, the three agents side by side, and, like, Hugh Grant comes up to them, and it's like, oh, we have a new code name for you guys. It's a rather good one, too. U.N.C.L.E. And then he walks away.
Yeah.
That means absolutely nothing, because, like...
Right.
Like, we don't know what like, after he says it, cuts to credits. And
they show us what it is.
It shows you what U.N.C.L.E. stands for, but that means nothing to you. Like,
right. You know, well, the whole movie, they were looking for her U.N.C.L.E., Mike. That's the joke there.
You know what? That totally flew over my head. So.
Come on! But, so, whoosh on your part. But, yeah, it is pretty dumb. But they're, like, that.
But even so, yeah, I think that's like, whatever. But yeah, okay, you're right. Sure. That's...
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of one of those, I don't want to say reboot, but like, you know, and then the show takes place is like what's, you know...
Right.
This is the prequel to the show.
Yeah, it's like Man of Steel, where it's like, it's everything leading up to him being Superman.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, how it's like one of the most annoying things in Man of Steel, and that movie annoys me a lot, but it's,
No, I've never mentioned that before, Mike, don't worry.
I'm going to get off on a little tangent here, but at the end of the movie, towards the end of the movie, they're at, like, an army base, and a guy comes up to, like, a general and has, like, a phone, and it's like, oh, Superman's doing some things, and the general looks at him funny, And the general like kind of, and the guy like shrugs his shoulders like, oh, that's what they're calling him. He's Superman. Okay. Like as if the movie's embarrassed to have a character named Superman.
Be Superman, right? Yeah, exactly.
And I feel like that's a little bit of what this was. Like it was, you know, we have to lead up to the fact that their organization is called Uncle,
right.
Which isn't even that silly. Like it's not like it's super weird. It's like if you look at Mission Impossible: Rogue Nation, like that's a movie where Tom Cruise is part of an organization called the Impossible Mission Force,
right?
Which is a really silly name, and they play it completely straight. Like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah. So, and Uncle actually has relevance to the story, so like
exactly.
It's not that silly.
You know, so that annoyed me a little bit, that ending. Other spoilery things: Gabby Teller, Alicia Vikander's character, is a triple agent.
Yeah, didn't see that coming.
Yeah, so I mean, what'd you think of that? I thought that was like a solidly fun twist. Like,
yeah. Yeah, that was pretty cool. And it also, now that I was thinking about it, there were Guy Ritchie moments around that. How, like, we skip, like, a few seconds of a scene just to have it be explained in a flashback later.
Yeah. Yes.
And that happens around when she double, triple crosses the people or whatever.
Yeah, that actually, like, there was the scene where Napoleon Solo is like infiltrating the dinner party or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and you would see him like knock into people or whatever and like do things, and then afterwards you would like a few seconds later you would see that he stole something off of those people,
yeah.
And then it would flash back to him knocking into
to
them,
him stealing them, yeah.
as if the audience had forgotten that he knocked into those people,
right,
which kind of bugged me, but yeah,
that just reminds me. That whenever that kind of thing happens, there's an old Mystery Science Theater joke. I forget which one it is. I think it's Future Wars, where, like, whatever. And then there's, at, like, three quarters in the movie, there's a flashback that explains the whole movie up until where we, like, were in the previous scene. And they're like, well, we're all caught up with the movie now. And whenever that happens in other movies, that's all I think of. It's like, we just saw that. Like, you don't need a flashback to it.
Exactly, yeah. I thought like that happened a few times in this movie, and it was kind of annoying every time. But Gabby Teller as the triple agent, I thought worked pretty well. I thought she was, and Alicia Vikander played it really well. Like she was pretending to be a German, like a normal German girl who was the daughter, right. But it turned out she was a British secret agent. She was a German girl who it looked like betrayed Solo and Ilya, and then. Yeah. It turned out she was a British secret agent. Who actually betrayed them for her mission.
Right.
So, yeah, that's pretty wild. And then the end of the movie, it seems like she's going to get in on the wacky... Like,
yeah, she's spy, part of Uncle now.
Spy fun. So, you know, if there's a sequel, which there won't be because this movie didn't do well at the box office.
I don't think we need one.
Yeah. But, I mean, that said, I mean, that there are some... there's some truly, really good moments in this movie. First, I really like the bit where Solo and Ilya are arguing while a guy is, like, in the electric chair behind them.
Oh, my God, yes.
And
he bursts into flame.
And he bursts into flame, like, while they're arguing and they don't even notice. Like,
yeah, that was great.
That was a really funny moment. Really dark moment.
Very dark, yeah. My favorite moment is probably when Solo and Ilya break into the like shipping company warehouse or whatever.
Yeah, and then afterwards the whole boat scene, the boat chase.
Yeah. So they break into the shipping warehouse or whatever, and then they're trying to escape, and they like close off the bay with these like security walls, and Solo and Ilya are in a boat, a power boat, and Solo falls off and like climbs up onto a dock and breaks into a truck, and he finds like a dock worker's lunch, and he starts eating it while there's just this shootout going on in front of him.
Yes, and then when he finally, like, once, like, Ilya actually needs help, he, like, just drives the truck onto a boat. And
yeah, and he just looks so sad while he's doing it. It's like his, and he's like, turns up the radio, and it's, like, Italian opera or something. He's just, like, drinking wine, and you just see boats exploding in the reflection of the windshield. So those moments like that were very funny and awesome.
That whole sequence is really good. And the banter between Solo and Ilya, I think, goes a long way to making this movie pretty good. Like, it's a lot of fun to just watch them talk together. I think, like, both Cavill and Armie Hammer do a really good job. Like, I think Armie Hammer, like, deserves a win at some point. Like,
yeah, yes.
I think after Social Network, I really thought he was like an amazing actor.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I wanted him to be cast as Superman. Funnily enough.
Oh my god.
I think he would have been really good at it. Well, like that was when they were casting Man of Steel, and they went with Henry Cavill, obviously. But he was like my choice. Like I thought he would be great at it. And actually, funnily enough, he was actually cast as Batman in the Justice League movie they were going to try to make a while ago with George Miller.
Wow.
Directing a while ago. So
that would have been awesome.
That would have been crazy. But I mean, that ship has sailed, but that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I actually hear there's like a rumor going around that George Miller might direct Man of Steel 2. Like
what?
Yeah. Like, I mean, on the one hand, it would probably make Man of Steel 2 awesome.
Yeah, that's true.
But, like, I would much rather him just do Mad Max movies for the rest of his career. Like,
just forever.
I just want to see more Mad Max movies. Like,
yeah, I wonder now that he kind of blew everyone out of the water with Mad Max, with Fury Road, if he's going to be sought after by the studios now after doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. He's like 70-something years old, so it's not like he's a... Like, he's not, like, a young director that the studio can, like, kind of control. He's...
Yeah, exactly.
You know, he's going to want to do his own thing, and so... I mean, I hope... Like, he's planning on a Mad Max movie, so I'm hoping he does that. There's... I feel like the rumor about him doing Man of Steel 2 is very unsubstantiated, but just kind of, like, popped up on the internet one day.
I hope it doesn't take him 25 years again, or however long it took him to do this.
Yeah, exactly. But in any case, Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Oh, yeah, right. The other movie that we were talking about.
Yeah. So, I mean, overall thoughts, solid time.
Yeah.
You know.
If you want to kill a few hours and you got nothing to do, go see it, I guess.
Yeah.
And Straight Outta Compton sold out. go see Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yeah, solid time. But, I mean, there's been a lot of spy movies this year, and I feel like... Yeah. A lot of them have been much better than Man from U.N.C.L.E. I mean, you've had Kingsman, you've had Spy, you've had Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. You know, I think Man from U.N.C.L.E. Yep. Isn't as good as any of those movies. And so, you know, I mean, it's a solid time. It's a solid diversion. And, you know, it does a lot of good – it does a lot of things really well. But at the end of the day, I don't think it's something that I'm going to remember like a month from now. You know?
Right. It's a good – if you want to get your spy fix before Spectre comes out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go see this.
I'm very excited for Spectre. And then
I can't wait for that movie.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I think that about wraps up our Man from U.N.C.L.E. review. So, Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me on twitter.com/mdfilmblog.
Yes. Yeah, so you can find me at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog. And you can find all of my podcasts and stuff on filmbook.com, where I podcast about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Gotham, The Walking Dead, and all this kind of stuff. Thank you for listening to Film Bookcast. If you're listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to our podcast, rate it, and take a moment to give us a review. Any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you're emailing about in the title of your email. We produce so many different ones, it's hard to keep track. We'd love to hear from you. So we are going to review our next Complete Works episode. Is going to be the next thing we record, and that will be The Cotton Club, which is a Francis Ford Coppola movie Nicolas Cage starred in back in the day. And I'm pretty excited about that one. That sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. It's like a crime drama from it takes place in the 1930s.
Yeah, this should be pretty good. I mentioned to my parents that was our next film, and they seemed pumped. So. I can't say that I've ever seen it. They said it was good. So.
Okay, cool. Anyway, and check out our next film bookcast. What should we review, Mike?
I don't know. Actually, I haven't kept an eye on what's coming out recent soon.
Yeah, I mean...
In the next week. I know Straight Outta Compton just came out, but we'll do something new.
Right, by the time we record a new episode, like, Straight Outta Compton will be old news.
Yeah.
Although I do want to see Straight Outta Compton. I've been meaning to...
Yeah, so do I, actually.
I mean, we could review The Transporter Refueled.
Or we cannot.
We cannot do that, also. Man, the next couple weeks kind of dead. Maybe The Visit, which is a... The M. Night Shyamalan found footage movie.
Right.
So that could be...
Oh, two of my favorite things in one movie. that's going to be so good.
There's one thing I love more than M. Night Shyamalan. It's found footage movies.
Oh, man.
So we could probably review that one if that's... That's weird. I'm looking at projectionlist.com, and you know, they, for the like, they list it by title, date, studio, and genre. Yeah. And for The Visit, they have title, date, studio, and for genre, they have comedy slash horror.
What?
Which I didn't even know about that. So I'm actually kind of
wow.
I'm sort of intrigued by this now. I'm actually online doing a horror comedy. Like
that would be awesome. Actually, I think.
Like, because the thing is that have you seen the trailers for The Visit?
Yeah, I saw one of them. Yeah.
Okay, I've seen like
a while ago
some here and there, and it just looks profoundly silly and stupid. and so, but if it's actually playing it for laughs, then maybe it could be okay.
That might actually be pretty good. We'll have to check that out.
Yeah. Otherwise, I mean, after that, Black Mass is coming out after the week after that, which does look kind of interesting with Johnny Depp as Whitey Bulger, right?
Yeah.
But that's. I saw that trailer I think I saw that trailer when I saw Man from U.N.C.L.E., and I had no idea that was Johnny Depp until his name popped up.
I know. Like it's pretty crazy.
So I'm actually kind of intrigued by that. But it looks like we'll probably review The Visit next, because that's in the wheelhouse of, like, the dates coming up.
Right.
So.
But thanks for listening to us try to figure that out.
Yeah. Yeah, but we might review Life Fast, too. You never know. All right, yeah. So join us next time for Film Bookcast, where Mike and I will probably be reviewing The Visit. And thank you guys so much for listening. We are out.